Welcome back to the Op Lab podcast. Super excited today. I know I say that every time, but this is really a lot of fun for me. And today we have as our guest Richard Gamiz. I'm trying to get that name right. We talked about it before.
You got
but,
it.
But super excited. I met Richard at actually an Apeiron event in Chicago. I'm trying to remember. It's probably been 6 months maybe, or maybe longer now.
Yeah, I think it was June.
Okay. And met him there. And so if you don't know, Apeiron is a company that both of us, I'm working to become a certified coach in, and Richard has been a coach and actually is my coach with Apeiron. So it's great to have him here today. But it's basically, and I'll let Richard even talk about it more, but it's basically, it's really human optimization, human performance optimization. So Apeiron is basically a word that means limitless. And so you think about limitless potential as a human, and that's what we're trying to really kind of uncover. And of course, that fits in perfectly with the whole idea of this podcast, which is really trying to look at, you know, optimization of the human. And so what better, you know, person to have on here today than Richard, who's a coach in that realm. So welcome, Richard. Super excited to have you here. And wanted to start just a little bit about your little bit of your story of how you got into this. I know you're a physician's assistant, and you've done a lot of things in the medical community, but kind of what led you in this direction, if you don't mind sharing a little bit of that. I know our listeners would like to kind of hear a little bit of the background.
All right, yeah, I'd be happy to. So it's a little bit of a long story because every stage of my life has led up to this. So I believe, I was a paramedic first.
Okay.
Being a paramedic, I realized how fragile we are. Like that, our lives can change. We take a lot of stuff for granted. We're, humans are just fragile. So between that, accidents, trauma, shocks to the system, and then going in and out of nursing homes and picking up very frail seniors that have lived a whole life and seeing how they ended up, that made a pretty big impact on me just, when I was young, in my 20s. Went on to PA school, became a physician assistant to try to do my best to help people, mostly to, even back then, to be, use the word anti-fragile, but to get them healthier so that those shocks and those attacks on the system aren't as severe. And also to help that mitigate some of the frailty that happens as we get older. But what ended up happening, what I found in the healthcare, in our typical healthcare, what I now call a sick care system, we don't do any of that. We just let people get old, and we don't do anything about it. We just think it's completely natural for people to get old and frail and sick and die. Now I know better. And the other side of that is we always waited for symptoms to show up. We don't look at anything. You have propensities for this. Let's try and fix this. Let's get ahead of it. Our current healthcare system doesn't seem to do any of that. So a few years ago, I started Live Health Strong as a blog. Started looking further and further, and then got certified as an epigenetic health coach with Apeiron. I'm a physician assistant with Apeiron now, and a coach through Apeiron. And what we do is we look at it in a different model. It's a whole different mindset. We can get, there's a number of things that we do. We have basically a five-step process that we do. First thing is genetic analysis, blood analysis, cognitive testing, biospecific testing, which tests your stress response, that's HRV, blood pressure, skin conductance, skin temperature. We do all of that, and then we review it with you, our client or customer, and set that up in the eye of their goals. This is a very specific program. Now, unlike healthcare, where it's like, okay, we tested 17,000 people and this is what's best for them. You're one of the 17,000. No, this is about each individual. This is about you. We've got you down, we mark it, we fix it all to your goals, and then we create a plan depending on what level of service, 3, 6, or 12-month plan to map out to get you to that state of anti-fragile. Keep the muscle mass on. We don't have to become frail. Keep your cognitive function. We even have programs for training cognitive function so that we can keep our minds sharp and active even as we age. So it's been an amazing thing. I'm really glad to have found a Apeiron and found this brand of medicine, because it's apparently it's what I've been looking for a really long time.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, I've kind of come at it from kind of two sides of it. One is, as a coach, I'm interested in the same thing. I'm interested in trying to help my clients optimize, but also as a person too, I want to do that for myself. So I've been, I've said going through the coaching program, and I think we taught, and you're going to kind of help mentor me through that certification process. But also you're my coach in Apeiron. So I got to kind of look at it from both perspectives. And I know one of the things I want to share with people. So when I went to the actual center in Asheville and met with Richard, I've never been to a medical situation where the doctor, the PA in this case, was really excited for me to be there.
Absolutely.
It's kind of a different feel, right? So I could tell, your enthusiasm about, because obviously that's a passion, and then another aspect of that was, like, I got there 8:30 or 9, and had like 30 minutes for lunch or so, and left like at 4:30, and somebody was pretty much with me the entire time I was there. So it's a very thorough process, and most of those things as Richard mentioned, I some of the tests you do ahead of time, the things which obviously blood work and that sort of thing, and then some of the testing you do while you're there. And then obviously, also meeting with your coach and going through the genetics, which I had already gone through my own, ahead of time. And of course, I had the materials and all that. But just, again, one of the things that I take away from this whole process is that I'm a coach, but I need a coach too, and I have coaches in different realms. And so.
We all do. Yeah. Absolutely. I agree totally.
And, the more I talk to coaching, and you have a coach too. So it's like we all, it's never a process of that continued growth. You no matter where you're at, I think you can benefit from a coach. I remember years ago when I got into personal training, I think in the beginning it was new in this area. And so, sometimes I would get feedback as like people would say, why you need a trainer? I'm like, at the time, I remember Michael Jordan, and being like in his heyday. I'm like, do you think Michael Jordan has a coach? He has a coach for basketball. He has a coach for strength conditioning. That's one of the most motivated human beings on the earth, right? But he still has a coach. Yeah. So I think some people look at it the wrong way. It's like, I need a coach or a trainer or whatever because I can't motivate myself, But no, it's not that at all. It's really, now sometimes they can provide inspiration, that sort of thing, but really, even if you're super motivated, it's to help you take it to the next level and possibly see things that you don't see for yourself. So, like I said,
That's what I was going to say. Yeah, because we definitely we all have blind spots.
Yeah,
we have things that we don't see, and we have our ways of doing things and our habits and biases. We all have confirmational bias. Oh, I do this because of this, and then so you built that into your system. But we all have our blind spots.
Yep.
So I think that's where having a coach can, hey, did you think about this? No, never even saw it that way. Having that different perspective is huge. I wanted to go back for 1 second where you said that. This is one of the things that I love about Apeiron and this brand of medicine. If anybody goes to a doctor's office, you're in that office a total of about maybe an hour and a half of waiting time. The time that you're with your provider, maybe anywhere from 3 minutes to 10 minutes, at the max 15 minutes. And if it's 15 minutes, that doc can't wait to get out of the room. He doesn't want to be there with you anymore. I think when we sat down to talk at that desk, I think we sat down and talked for about two and a half hours.
Yep.
It's our initial interview, because this way I get to know you. I get to know what's driving you, what your goals are. If I don't know what your goals are, how am I going to come up with a plan for you? So that's why I think that this is just a whole new paradigm in medicine to really get ahead. And then having a coach like you said, every great athlete has one. Tom Brady probably has 3 coaches, 4 coaches. Everybody's got one. We all do. We're all. I think that that's a phenomenal thing to do. I think that this is just a great place to be right now. Great time. We have the technology and science and everything right now. We have a lot of levers that we can pull on to move somebody from all the way from being broke, you know, what we call broken in our field, you know, like out of balance or out of homeostasis into homeostasis, which is basically normal, and up from normal to optimized, and even beyond optimized. For somebody who's a bodybuilder or wants to compete, there are certain things that we can do to actually enhance certain systems that may need that, and all of that is available right now. And not to mention looking at all of it, for me personally, looking at it through the eyes of longevity and health span to keep people healthy for as long as possible.
All right. Awesome. Well, I think one of the things that really I got from Apeiron as well, and of course, you know, is exactly what you're talking about is, I know Dr. Stryker talks about like the looking at the human body or just the human in general, not just the body, but as a complex system. You know, and to me that kind of resonated. I know, I had, as you well know, because we talked about this, I had hip surgery a few years ago, and both hips, basically, not replaced totally, but like resurfaced. And I remember looking at the X-ray, with the doctor, and that's all we looked at was just the hips, And so they did a great job on the hips, but like as I understand more about physical movement, for instance. Like, we didn't look at, like, my feet. We didn't look at my knees. We didn't look at, how does all that play together? I know from, you guys in Apeiron takes it a step further. You're looking at, every piece of the puzzle. I know, like, one huge piece, which I'm trying to really, when we talked about doing this podcast, I said, I'd love to get you back on for, more than once because there's so much stuff to talk about. But I know one of the things that we're really trying to educate people on here is the breath. And how important that is.
I just said that.
And that's
a great example for you on that.
And so the more, I was talking with a client this morning, and she's a research, a doctor, and works at the hospital system here, and we're talking about the HRV and all this stuff, and and I said, in a way, I kind of think back if I started things over, it's almost like the first piece I would teach. With our exercise classes is the breath, and it seems like now we kind of teach it at the end, but really ideally it would be the first thing. And so I know that was one of the first things we did when I came to the center was we did some testing of that, looking at and I'm not testing people here other than doing just like a basic bolt score, but
right. That's a great start.
I can with my limited knowledge on it, I see that almost with everyone. In their how they breathe and all that, and a lot of them are especially right now with all the stuff going on with Corona and all that, high stress environment, right? So the breath can have a huge impact on that, and as far as mitigating the stress, but not just and a lot of times we don't even realize it, and like you said, having a different eye. And so if you had a good story on that, do you want to speak about that a little bit more?
Again, going back to comparing everything to the old healthcare model, the sick care model, you counted somebody's breath, their breath was 18 times a minute, okay, they're fine. Okay, they've actually taught us in medical school, they teach you if somebody's breathing 16 to 20 times a minute, that's a normal breath rate. That's not a normal breath rate. Back in the early 1900s, a normal breath rate was 6 to 12 times a minute. It's how bad our food is and our environment and the stress levels are that we're breathing that much faster. That's not a normal breath rate. We're so out of whack that we're calling stuff that's abnormal, we're now calling it normal. And they do the same thing for hormones and everything else, but that's a whole different story. So one of the things that about the complexity of the system, of this whole picture. So they've done studies on men with ED, erectile dysfunction. So and then they looked at how many of them had either sleep apnea or nasal polyps. They got a certain number. Then the guys that had the nasal polyps, they had the nasal polyps removed, and their ED got better because they were breathing through their mouths at night.
Wow.
That's talk about a complex system. Who would think that erectile, everybody, you go to a doctor about that, the first thing he's going to do is going to write you a pill. You don't need that pill. Let's look at the big picture. Let's fix the issue and then everything downstream starts to work the way it's supposed to, as opposed to adding a pill that's going to have separate side effects. It's going to drop your blood pressure, blurry vision. Who knows what's going to happen? Let's just fix the problem. So that's where I love this, again, is going back to looking at that complex system. This isn't like you've got this machine that's running across and you can unplug this and, you know, and something may or may not go wrong, or you plug, you know, it's not just one thing. So that's why we like to take that whole global picture. And breathing, it starts with breathing. My coaching program starts with breathing and sleep. As far as that goes, a great way to look at it. Everybody who wants to get in shape or wants to get their health better, the first thing that everybody thinks is food. So I like to kind of open up that blind spot to them, and I go, okay, so how long do you think a human being can live without food? No food. You got water, but no food. And the number is about 21 days. Absolutely no calories before the real stuff really starts to go wrong, and you may have some fatal happens, about 21 days. Water is about 3 days, rough estimate is 3 days. I'll throw sleep in there as two. Lack of sleep, it's anywhere from 10 to 14 days, no sleep. You're gonna die from something. You're gonna make an accident, you're gonna fall, you're gonna bang your head, something will kill you. It's not the lack of sleep, but you're gonna die probably within about 14 days of sleep. How long can we go without breathing? How long can you go without oxygen?
Not very long.
Not very long, right? Yeah, maybe 10 minutes. I think we should start there. Okay? Let's leave the food out for the hero. We've got a couple of weeks to deal with the food. Let's start with dialing your breathing. So I have my first week is basically gathering information. It's a virtual client. It's gathering information. I give them some things on how to gather their BALT score every morning and sleep. If they're not tracking their sleep with the device, then I kind of make some suggestions on tracking it. The best thing is some sort of a device. I don't like telling people to sleep with their phone in the room, because I tell everybody to get their phone and electronics out of the room. So, you know, it's kind of an iffy one, because we're really poor at being able subjectively to tell our own sleep. So we need some sort of device to track that. But just going back to your point of how important it is about looking at the whole picture and how this complex system, every little piece has to fit together for it to work correctly, optimally.
Awesome. So with let's say people that you've worked with using this process, you know, do you have any stories from that? Like as far as some of the changes, like you've seen some of your clients make, like that you could share with us.
You know, it's funny you say that, and I get goosebumps. Okay, I really do. I'm telling you that this is this is on the coaching side. You know, without dealing with peptides or hormones or anything, this is a guy who never wanted to work out. I worked with him. I used to work with him in the office, right? And he, you know, his exercise was walking. He wasn't overweight. He wasn't fat, but he was definitely sarcopenic. He had no muscle on him, okay? And he was proud of it. He never wanted to work out, but psoriasis, where his fingers would bleed and crack. Sometimes and literally start bleeding. He had been on asthma medication and a pump inhaler since he was a kid. He's about a year older than me, so he's 52 more or less, something like that. And an inhaler since he was a kid. I start working with him. I start giving him some stuff to do on, we started with the breathing and sleep. His sleep was a mess. Up till 11:30, 12 o'clock at night, waking up at 6 in the morning, watching TV or something stressful right before going to bed. So we started dealing with all that. His skin starts, just that, his fingers already started to get better. We started to deal with, finally we moved into his diet, and I did not want to use the word exercise. This was intentional with him, and I even told him, I go, look, you know, the next step in this process, we've done this, this, and this. The next step is movement. So I need you, can you guarantee me that you can give me 30 minutes a day for the next 7 days for movement? And he goes, depends what the movement is. First answer, right? So to make a long story short, he has recently, over the holidays, he bought himself a Peloton bike. And every day he's on that bike 30 minutes to an hour. And he's already looking at buying more home gym equipment, because he's actually working out his work now. He goes, I can't believe that you did this to me. He goes, I never thought that this would be possible. His skin is better, and he's no longer on the cortisone, the steroid for his asthma. He went to go see his pulmonologist in February, and he told, and he was taking prednisone, oral prednisone, awesome. And he told the pulmonologist that he had stopped both of them since January, and the guy couldn't believe it. He just goes, how'd you do that? And he tells him, and he goes, well, we'll just see what happens. You know, their negativity, you know, I know you've got to go get your lung x-rays and everything, but don't listen to him. And so it's a great story with him. He's actually starting to put on some muscle. He's feeling really good. One of the clients at the office, early 40s, we did his DNA, which kind of gives you what his telomere shortening and his damage that he's done to his very high stress environment for work. Again, bad sleep, bad eating on the road, stress, high stress levels. He was early 40s, and his DNA age came back at 50. So it looked like his DNA had been damaged an extra 9 years already. We haven't retested it yet. He's going to go through the full one-year program, and then we're going to retest him. But one of his goals was to, he noticed that he couldn't gain any muscle. He was losing muscle. He liked to go to the gym. He'd spend an hour or so at the gym every day. But he was noticing that he, no matter how hard he worked out or what protein he took, he couldn't put any muscle back on. Within, I guess in mid-May, it's going to be 3 months. He's gained 12 pounds.
Wow.
He's gained, and we haven't repeated his DEXA body scan because of this virus thing going on, but when he gets back into the office, we're going to repeat his DEXA body scan so that we can see his body mass composition and see how much of those 12 pounds is actually muscle. And he knows it's muscle. I've talked to him on the phone, and he goes, oh, there's no doubt it's muscle. He goes, I haven't been this big in years. So now our next process is that he's good with his size and what muscle is, but he wants to thin down and shed some of the fat. So then that's our next process with him. Another one of those things, like you just see the changes. Another person with like hair loss and hair thinning. Within 2 to 3 months, the skin and the hair thinning, the hair was actually starting to regrow back from alopecia. From those treatments at the medical center.
Awesome.
As we start to get things in order, everything just starts to fall back into place. It's a beautiful thing.
Yeah. Well, one of the big things that we taught is one of the things that I, is a challenge for me, but I've been working on is, you mentioned it with your clients, like sleep. That's another big one. And, before, for me, for instance, I never would have thought I would have said this to somebody, but I actually is a friend of mine, but also comes in and trains and doesn't sleep well at all. And I said, look, I know, it's probably easier for him to come and work out than for him to get sleep, and I'm like, right now your priority, like if you want to lose weight, actually, I'm going to say a priority is really your sleep. If you're only getting 4 hours of sleep a night and then you're coming in trying to work out, you're just in a way, I hate to say doing more damage, but the sleep needs to be a priority. And actually, I remember I was at a conference a few years ago, and I got to hear, I think in Dr. Kirk Parsley, I know he was at the meeting we were at.
Yeah.
I told him there, it was really when it first started to kind of click with me about sleep, because him being, because a lot of people, I think of, this lack, like going on less sleep is almost like they're tougher. If you get 8 hours of sleep, you're almost like being a wimp. And I
right.
would say I was probably in that category a little bit myself.
I was there.
But I heard him speak, and I figured, well, this is this big, tough Navy SEAL guy that they're known for not having sleep, and he's saying that you need to sleep. It kind of got me rethinking. But I remember hearing him speak, and I also got to hear Rob Wolf, Rob Wolf, speaking the same thing. And even Rob was saying that the sleep was a priority, even though he's known for the paleo nutrition and all that. That goes back to like you're talking about the complex system aspect of it is, sometimes we're focused on that one thing, and the missing piece is actually something we don't think it is.
It could just be sleep.
Yeah, it could be sleep.
Just be getting,
yep.
getting your 7.5 hours of quality sleep. And if you're on Ambien, that doesn't count. that messes up all of your sleep rhythms. That's why it's good to have a device, because you can actually see what your sleep rhythms, your cycles. That restorative sleep, we absolutely need that. If you're doing damage to your muscles, which is what exercise is a stress hormesis. We need that little bit of stress to make us stronger. But if you're not getting the proper sleep, then you're not going to get stronger. Your body's not recovering from that exercise. And then the next day you're out there going out damaging it again. You're going to end up with long-term damage. So you're right. To some degree, you know, you're going in there all the time and not getting sleep. To some degree, you are hurting yourself more than you are doing benefit. The sleep thing is one of those things that it's almost hard to get it into people's heads that they need to sleep. Recently, I read some place that during the season, LeBron James sleeps like 10 yep. hours or something
yep.
each night to yep. get enough sleep, because he knows how much sleep yep. it is. And this is just anecdotal. I have no evidence or no proof of this, but there was two very famous people who thrived on saying that they only slept 4 hours. But they were contemporaries with each other. It was Margaret Thatcher and Ronald Reagan. And they both ended up with dementia and Alzheimer's. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things that sleep does. As we're awake, we build up these two proteins, TAO, tau proteins, and amyloid. Both of those proteins build up in our brain as during the hours that we're awake. When we go to sleep, is the only time during the day that those proteins get washed out of them. So let's say you finally fall asleep, you go into deep sleep, REM, deep sleep. That's when, let's say, the ventricles open up and enough cerebral spinal fluid gets up into your brain to wash out those the amyloid and the tau proteins. And if you're not getting enough sleep, you're not washing those out. And then those end up leading to problems later on. Now, again, I got no proof. This is anecdotal. Of Margaret Thatcher and Ronald Reagan, who were both famous for saying that I only sleep 4 hours. I've only slept 4 hours for the last 20 years. Look how they both went out.
Yeah.
So just keep that in mind. So if anybody out there listening saying, oh, I could get away with 4 hours of sleep, 6 hours of sleep. Some of the statistics on this, I have the reports around here somewhere. I've read the white paper of studies. People that chronically sleep 6 hours a night have the same chances of dying early as somebody who smokes cigarettes.
Wow.
So if you're going to the gym and you're doing all the right stuff and you're eating all the right stuff, but you're still killing it on both ends and only getting 6 hours of sleep, you still have the same chances of dying early as somebody who's smoking cigarettes. Not that I'm condoning smoking cigarettes,
right.
You know, but it's just as bad.
Yep.
And then the other one, the World Health Organization, WHO, classifies people with sleep shift disorder, like those workers at hospitals and gotta hand it to you, frontline people. They're out there working in the hospitals right now. I gotta hand it to you. You guys are amazing. You're doing what you do. Those people that are working in those overnight shifts, they got a 30% chance, higher chance of getting cancer than the rest of the population from that not sleeping right. So sleep is essential. We have to get it, and it should be a minimum of 7.5 hours. On our genetic panels that we do at Apeiron, we can give you some people who are better with a little bit less sleep. But a little bit less sleep means 7 hours.
Yeah.
And then, you know, average is 7.5 to 8. And then your panels also tell you whether you're more of a morning person or an evening person. And we kind of help you dial that in and what that means in your life. Like I give people examples of what they should be doing in the morning if they're a morning person, as opposed to putting it off. You'll make better decisions. You'll get better workouts, better test scores. If you know you're a morning person, you move that stuff up to the morning, go leave it to the afternoon. Your performance will improve.
Right.
Leading back to precision performance.
Yep. Well, you mentioned a couple times the measurables, using the devices. And that's one thing I found too, is like that was kind of a light bulb for me when I started using, I used Aura to begin with. Now I have like a Whoop that I use, you know, it's the, I think it's WASU, I think is how you, and I forget the exact, what the acronym exactly stands for, but it's like, it was really eye-opening for me, because I thought I was getting, like I would try to get in the bed and say, I'm getting in the bed for 8 hours. But when I actually looked at the amount of sleep I was getting, it was nowhere near that. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Yeah, a little bit. I actually have a formula around here to Yeah, and I'm still learning some things. I just realized that on the watch, you can actually change some things. Like when you sync it in the morning, the three little dots on the top, you sync it, you put in what time you went to bed and what time you woke up, because that has to add in. To the 8 hours in bed doesn't mean 8 hours of sleep. So there's a certain percentage of that time that you should be sleeping, your sleep score. So yeah, there's some things that are really important about that. And I have the formula, I just can't remember it off the top of my head right now, is you take the amount of time that you were in bed, your total amount of time in bed, and I believe you subtract the amount of hours that you were asleep, and then there's a multiplier, and it gives you your percentage of your sleep score. And anything below 60 or 70 is really poor sleep. And you might, oh, I was in bed for 8 hours. Yeah, but you tossed and turned for 40. You got up to pee in the middle of the night, and then you were up for 20 minutes because you couldn't fall back to sleep. And then you woke up in the morning, but you were in bed for another 10 minutes before you got out of bed. So all of that adds up to what we consider sleep time. You know, generally when I ask a client for the first time, how many hours do you sleep? Well, I go to bed at 10 and I wake up at 6. Okay, you know, those are bedtimes. That's not sleep. Right. You know, that's one of those little blind spots.
Yep.
Just that's a tiny, it's actually a huge blind spot, because we all program, oh, I go to bed at 10, I wake up at 6, or whatever, you know, and they're missing out on a crucial part of their life, optimizing their performance.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So, and I know I was going to kind of, you talk about blind spots and just kind of share, I want to share this because you helped me out, you know, and I have no idea. I think we talked about it since then. It's one of the things that I would just call it what it is. It's kind of like an addiction. It was diet drinks. Okay. So oh, yeah. I won't say that I'd never have one, you know, because I think we talked about that too.
Of course. Yeah.
But and I've tried to quit drinking those things for like years. And for whatever reason, again, I think part of it's just having a coach and some things, that the way you worded it, might have something to do with the flame retardant in Mountain Dew. I don't know, but you know, it's kind of clicked. And so it's it's just those little things, you know, that sometimes can make a huge difference. Do you have any other? I mean, you mentioned that your friend that now works out that used to not, you know, look. Yeah. Do you have any other kind of examples like that, or just something? You know, that clicked with someone, you know, when you were coaching them, that made a big impact?
Yeah, well, one of the other ones, one of the things that I do, and I've done it with him, all of my coaching clients, especially, like, you know, the ones that go through the 3-month coaching program, and also for the medical ones, with the coaching clients more. Once they're on the track and things are pretty stable and I see where they are generally, and also it depends a little bit on their DNA, but almost everybody can do this. Depends on their leptin and ghrelin levels, how hungry they're going to be that week. I do a 5-day fasting mimicking diet with them. I'm telling you, the biggest thing that I can do for somebody, if I only did that one thing for somebody, get them to sleep right, okay, breathing, free, and then get them to do that FMD, that is a game changer.
Yeah.
By the time it's over, that fifth day, and then that sixth day when you wake up and you're ready to, most people don't want to start eating the stuff they used to eat before. The words I get back is like, oh my God, it was like hitting the reset button. Mm-hmm. I feel like a different person. Where'd all this energy come from? The clear-headedness, I didn't know what brain fog was until I did the FMD. Once I did that FMD, the first time I did it, I lost 8 pounds and 3/4 of an inch from my waist, because it burns the fat, torches the fat off of your waist. Then I did it a couple more times last year, you know, so I didn't really follow it to a T. I just did it last week and I completed it last week. I dropped 10 pounds last week.
Yeah.
I feel amazing. It's like there's no way that I'm going to go back to eating what I was eating before. So what it does is it's just not just for me, but what I've noticed in the clients is that something clicks. Something wakes up inside of them going, this is what I'm supposed to feel like. And then, you know, you start eating, you start getting back into your regular food by Thursday or Friday or Saturday or the next week, the weight stays off, you still feel better, and you did a lot of the stuff. The fasting mimicking diet activates brand new stem cells and something else called autophagy. I can get into that a little bit if we have the time. So, but a week or two later, you've been eating your regular foods again, you're already starting to feel that, gee, hey, I'm not as high anymore.
Right. Right.
I don't feel that anymore. The best thing, I don't know, you're my age, so you know that song, Huey Lewis in the News, I Need a New Drug. That's my new drug. Yeah. Okay. You know, what it does to me is amazing.
Yeah. Well, I just did it the week before you. Remember, we talked about that.
Yeah.
And I'll be honest. I never would have done that had I not talked to you.
Yeah, most people would.
Because I like to eat.
Yeah.
But I had a similar experience. And, I'm fairly lean already. But actually, I dropped like 11 pounds. And, and we used the Fit3D as a body measurement here, and I think it was like over, like same kind of thing, like over an inch on my waist. Now I haven't, since I put some of that weight back on, I haven't redone it. I did it right before I started, right after. You're talking about the mental clarity was pretty interesting. And then also I talked to you also, which I was glad I did, about the exercise aspect of it. So, you know, backing off the intensity of the exercise.
Yeah,
when I
read, really important.
Yeah, because when I read the book, I thought, okay, it's just, again, kind of, you know, mindset was like, well, I can push through, you know, I'm not going to pass out, any of that stuff. But talking to you, how it really, you're trying to shut down certain pathways. So I backed off. But what was interesting with my HRV, like it's, you know, with the Whoop, it's basically, you know, you have a score, like a readiness score. And then you have, if you're kind of, let's say overtrained, it's going to be red. If you're kind of moderate, it's going to be yellow. And if you say good to go, it's going to be green. I've never had it since I've had this thing for probably at least 2-3 years. I've never had it hit green that many days in a row. And
really?
So it's pretty interesting. It's like some days it was like 90 in the 90s. And I'm like,
yeah.
And the only thing's different.
That's
now, of course, I backed off the intensity of the exercise, but it was kind of very, it was very interesting that the HRV scores went up. Each day, reset button.
Yeah.
So it's pretty cool. So, like you said, the brain fog. I don't necessarily feel as mentally clear, but my energy has been good, even though it's been a couple weeks since I did it. So, interesting. I've got one of my clients actually doing it. He's a physician actually, and he's doing it this week. So I need to talk to him.
Great. Great.
See how he's doing? It's like I think he started on Monday, so today will be a good day to talk to him.
You may not want to talk to him today. Give me some encouragement. The third day is always the toughest.
Yep.
Every time I do it, the third day is the toughest. I want to go back to that point that you mentioned, because I thought the same thing. The very first time I did FMD, I didn't work out. I followed it, you know. And then the subsequent ones I did last year, I thought the same thing. I didn't feel that bad. I can go work out. I didn't... look into much of the background. I thought it was more like a safety thing. They don't want the barbell falling in my neck or something. You know. So I had a conversation with one of the docs from Prolon, the people that created it, and I asked him specifically about vitamins and asked him about working out, and it has something to do with IGF, which is insulin growth factor. So that FMD is shutting that pathway down almost completely. So you have very little inflammation and almost no IGF that week. And then if you're working out, it increases that inflammation and that workout causes an increase in that IGF, so you don't get the full effect of the fast limiting diet. Is how he explained that to me. So I figured, okay, so let me do it your way.
Yeah.
And it worked. It was amazing. Yeah, yeah.
All right. Yeah. Awesome. Well, I want to be respectful of your time today, and I appreciate you. We kind of did this last minute kind of thing, so I appreciate you jumping on, and it's been a lot of fun. So, real quick, I know you have your own website, livehealthstrong, is that correct?
.com. Yeah, livehealthstrong.com.
And we'll make a link to that, and of course, appear on as well. And people can reach out to you if they want more coaching. And then I know we've been talking about, maybe you're working with a couple of our clients here that have questions also. So they can reach out to me as well, and we can kind of put you together. But definitely appreciate you being on today. It was a lot of fun, and hopefully we can do this again.
Thanks, Billy. Thank you.
And go into some more depth on some of the other topics as well. But appreciate it.
Absolutely.
A lot of fun,
yeah.
And we'll talk to you soon.
Great idea. I love it. Thanks, Billy. Thanks for everything.
All right. Thanks, Richard. All right. Bye-bye.
Have a great day.
You too.